this ministerial will enhance and strengthen all of the efforts underway to achieve our policy goals.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Canada next week for meetings on North Korea. It's Friday, January 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of our program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, UNICEF calls for help for Rohingya children in Rakhine State. Australia accuses China of building useless white elephants. And Bitcoin fluctuates, but is it a good source of startup money? It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will travel to Vancouver, Canada next week for a high-level ministerial meeting on addressing North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile program. Tillerson heads to the Canadian city Wednesday for the meeting, which State Department Director of Policy Planning Brian Hook said will not include Russia, China, or Japan. However, Hook said at a midday briefing Thursday that China and the United States have the same goals in denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
China has the same policy goal in terms of ensuring that North Korea does not become a nuclear weapon state and acquire the means to deliver a nuclear warhead. So there is broad agreement in the international community about the end state. This Vancouver ministerial is something which supports all of our efforts collectively. And we have been in touch with China and Russia on this ministerial, and we will be giving them a readout when it's over and a discussion. And it will be very helpful. I think that they will welcome a lot of the actions that come out of the discussion because it all rolls up into the same policy end state.
Tillerson is scheduled to meet with Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland. U.S. Defense Secretary, that is, Jim Mattis, will host a dinner at the beginning of the meetings. The ministerial comes after South Korea's president suggested the U.S. and North Korea might be able to meet. The White House insisted it would have to be at the appropriate time and under the right circumstances. President Trump and South Korean President Moon earlier this week also pledged to maintain the maximum pressure campaign over Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs. Ken Gauss, the director of International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analyses, told VOA's Victor Beatty that the only way the North will engage in talks with the U.S. is if Washington changes its long-standing policy on denuclearization.
I think the only way that North Korea will come to the table, the negotiating table, is if there are no preconditions. That means the United States cannot put denuclearization as a precondition for talks. If they do, the North Koreans will not come to the table. I think the U.S. needs to focus on denuclearization as being the ultimate objective, but not as a precondition for negotiations.
President says he sees a lot of good energy in the talks between the Koreas. I like it very much, he said. He thinks we will have peace through strength, referring to his policy of ensuring peace through a strong military.
And again, that would be also suggestive of the idea that if the U.S. can make North Korea believe that all options are on the table, including the military option, that it might make North Korea more willing to come to the table. I would argue, on the other hand, that North Korea is adamant about not giving up its nuclear program, and I think that it's very well worth us, the United States, to really seriously look at the assumptions that we have behind any potential courses of action against North Korea, especially the military course.
President Moon, in a news conference on Wednesday, gave President Trump some credit for the atmosphere that made it conducive for talks at Panmunjom.
I think that President Moon is in a very difficult situation. President Moon has to keep both North Korea and the United States invested in some sort of diplomatic solution. On the North Korea side, he has to figure out what can he do to keep North Korea invested in continued inter-Korean dialogue past the time of the Olympics. And that probably means having to think about what sort of incentives you can put on the table, such as economic and possible security incentives, to keep North Korea interested in that dialogue. On the other hand, he has to be very careful that he keeps the United States invested And that means that making sure that the United States does not get in its mind that this is some sort of a trap by North Korea, that they're driving a wedge between the United States and South Korea, that South Korea has to make it very clear that they are very close in terms of their alliance with the U.S. And so giving deference to the American president for making this happen is something I think in terms of his information campaign toward the United States to ensure that the U.S. stays invested.
Ken Gauss said that since North Korea views the U.S. as its top existential threat, it is compelled to keep its nuclear deterrent. But he also said there's another reason why the U.S. needs to drop its policy of a denuclearized Korean peninsula. Kim Jong-un sees the nuclear program as intimately tied up with his own legitimacy. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Vulgar butcher Wu Gan sought to appeal his 8-year prison sentence. Myanmar prosecution of journalists spurs international pressure. Marriott apologizes after listing Taiwan and Tibet as countries. China and Mekong countries adopt a new river plan. And China denies it may slow purchases of U.S. government bonds. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The UN Children's Fund reports tens of thousands of Rohingya children are living under appalling prison-like conditions with little or no access to basic services in Myanmar's Rakhine State. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya have fled Rakhine State since a military crackdown on the Muslim minority, that is, began in August. The military action came after militant Rohingya attacked a police station there. The UN and the United States have characterized the Myanmar military's campaign as ethnic cleansing. As Lisa Schlein reports, for the Rohingya still in Rakhine State, life is a daily struggle against malnutrition, disease, and death.
More than 655,000 Rohingya have fled to Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, since the end of August, to escape violence and persecution in Myanmar's northern Rakhine State. About half of those are children. UN Children's Fund senior advisor Marixi Mercado recently returned from a month-long visit to Myanmar. She says it was difficult to get a true picture of the children remaining there because of lack of access. But she was able to obtain what she calls a deeply troubling view of the precarious existence of children living in central Rakhine State. Mercado says more than 60,000 Rohingya children remain there, almost forgotten and trapped in 23 camps where they were driven by violence in 2012. She describes conditions of two camps she visited.
The two camps are below sea level. There's almost no tree cover. The first thing that you notice when you reach the camps is the stomach-churning stench. Parts of the camp are literally cesspools. The shelters teeter on stilts above garbage and excrement. In one camp, the pond where people draw water from is separated by a low mud wall from the sewage.
Mercado says children walk barefoot through the muck and invariably some of them die from accidents and disease. She says it is extremely difficult for Rohingya to leave their camps for medical treatment, so people are turning to traditional healers, untrained physicians, or self-medication. She says basic living conditions and access to life-saving services urgently need to be improved. She says children are also suffering from an inability to get a decent education. She says learning takes place in poorly equipped temporary classrooms with determined volunteer teachers who have little formal training. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. military commanders are investigating a video that appears to show an American service member firing into the cab of a civilian truck in Afghanistan. A Pentagon spokesman said protecting civilians remains the U.S. military's top priority. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. China's Belt and Road Initiative, announced by President Xi Jinping in 2013, is a series of Chinese-built or financed projects stretching through 65 countries across the South Pacific through Asia to Africa. However, Australia has accused China of funding what it calls useless infrastructure projects across the South Pacific. Australian International Development Minister Concetta Fierravanti-Wells said that on several visits to island nations in the South Pacific, she had seen Chinese-built projects that were not being maintained or used properly. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports that China has lodged a formal diplomatic protest.
Roads to nowhere and useless buildings are part of China's checkbook diplomacy in Australia's backyard, according to Concetta Fierravanti-Wells. Australia's International Development Minister is worried about China's growing presence in the South Pacific. Fiji has been moving closer to China in recent years, and Papua New Guinea has signed a series of deals as part of Beijing's Belt and Road Global Trade Initiative. Officials in Canberra have also privately accused Beijing of trying to win favour by funding projects that channel money directly to leaders in the region. But Stephen Howes, the director of the Development Policy Centre at the Australian National University, says Chinese aid in the region has had mixed results.
We actually did a study of the effectiveness of Chinese aid to the Pacific. We looked at four countries, Samoa, Cook Islands, Tonga and Vanuatu. And we actually found in two of those countries, Samoa and Cook Islands, the aid actually worked pretty well and delivered good outcomes. Whereas in the other two, Tonga and Vanuatu, it was less successful.
But Howes argues that the lack of effectiveness is also down to the quality of leadership in those two South Pacific island nations. China's foreign ministry said comments by Australia's international development minister were full of ignorance and prejudice. Beijing has lodged a formal diplomatic protest. The Sydney-based think tank, the Lowy Institute, has calculated that China has transferred nearly $2 billion to developing nations in the South Pacific over the past 12 years. Opposition MPs in Canberra say Australia's cuts to its overseas aid budget have allowed China to exert more influence in the region. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
We have this news from VOA Asia. NATO's Resolute Support mission in Afghanistan says a U.S. soldier was wounded in what it called an active ground engagement. The incident occurred in the troubled Achin district in Nangarhar. No coalition service members were killed. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us. I'm David Byrd from Washington. Digital currency prices wobbled on Thursday. That's because South Korea, a hotbed for currencies like Bitcoin, said it would consider a trading ban. The country's justice minister said South Korea is planning a ban, but the presidential office said later that a ban is under review. No policy changes have been made, and while the country's justice ministry has taken a stern stance against the currencies, other agencies oppose an outright ban. Also on Thursday, the Wall Street Journal reported that China had ordered that Bitcoin mining operations be shut down there. But for some female entrepreneurs, the volatility of Bitcoin is part of doing business. That's because, as Tina Trin reports from New York, Many female-led startups are finding financing methods in the buzzy technologies of blockchain and cryptocurrencies.
In the tech startup world, there's no shortage of venture capital money for the next big idea. That is, if it comes from a man. Women often get shortchanged.
The venture capital landscape is dominated by 94% men, which makes it objectively harder for women and minorities to fundraise for many different reasons, including gender bias.
Now, female entrepreneurs are starting to explore alternative sources of funding, and their sights are set on the biggest and buzziest phenomena in tech and finance: cryptocurrencies and blockchain.
The value proposition of blockchain has to do with disintermediation, and really what that means is cutting out the middlemen or cutting out, you know, rent seekers in applications.
Cutting out the middleman also carries over to fundraising. ICOs, or initial coin offerings, allow founders to raise money by issuing a digital token or coin specific to their blockchain business.
There's no legacy of like male domination in blockchain because there's no legacy. And so why not like do this, get involved, like build something?
Michelle McCormick created Casting Coin, a digital currency that she plans to use for her crowdsourcing platform connecting models and brands.
Going beyond that small community of VCs and people who usually kind of controlled the means of capital there, you can see this open world where women are free to go out and to prove themselves.
But it's still early days for the technology.
I think what we're seeing is a lot of influx into just fast money into various ICOs. But I wouldn't call it success right off the bat because we want to understand the longevity of these types of fundraising processes.
For these ambitious women, long-term success means being a part of today's conversations. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
This news from VOA Asia. The U.S. Postal Service is releasing the latest stamp in its Lunar New Year series in Hawaii. The stamp celebrates the Year of the Dog and was designed by Asian American artist Kam Mak. It features an arrangement of lucky bamboo and a square of red paper with the Chinese character Fu rendered in calligraphy. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. People around the world are living longer, and their quality of life as they grow old is changing. The World Health Organization finds that the number of older adults living alone is dramatically increasing, and that could lead to loneliness, social isolation, and depression. But VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details about a solution, a robot companion that's available for homes in the not-too-distant future, and was featured at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas.
Hi, my name is Ellie Q.
Ellie Q does not have a face, arms, or legs, but it talks and tries to keep her human companion active and engaged.
You've been sitting all day. You are not on your track towards completing your goal. You should go for a walk.
This robot does mimic head movements to connect with the user. She even tells jokes.
Why did King Kong climb the Empire State Building? Because he couldn't fit in the elevator.
Made by Intuition Robotics, co-founder Don Schuler describes Ellie Q as a proactive social companion. She takes calls, reads emails,
and even play music.
This robot, Ellie Q, aims to solve a growing problem in many countries around the world.
The world is changing due to the demographic change all over the world. In China, through the one-child policy, we're seeing a huge aging of the population, and Europe has a negative birth rate for a few decades already. So this is by far a global problem.
For the elderly, it is designed
to help them stay sharp, keep connected, active, and engaged. LEQ is the one that initiates most of the interactions. And by learning the older adult, learning their needs, learning the environment.
Schooler says LEQ is not supposed to replace humans. Instead, this robot can help older adults stay motivated and connect them to their loved ones to fend off social isolation and depression. The company is still determining LEQ's price, but plans to make it commercially available sometime later this year.
What is the color displayed on the screen?
Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Las Vegas.
Red. It was blue.
You got it wrong this time.
And the LEQ is not the only device at the CES that could help older people. The Orcam MyEye 2.0 device is made for blind people or those with limited eyesight. It features a smart camera about the size of your finger, and it can read out writing or print from any source. It's also equipped with artificial intelligence tools to recognize faces, products, and money in real time. Also at the CES, the French airbag maker Elite demonstrated wearable hip protectors for older people. They're battery-powered, and they're worn as a belt just above the hips. When an individual is about to fall, sensors can cause the side airbags to fill with air to prevent broken bones. And R-Pure is another French company that is still raising money to increase production of an anti-pollution mask. The mask is designed for drivers of bicycles and motorcycles, or people who just don't like the air where they breathe. It's designed to keep out harmful pollutants in the air, as well as viruses and bacteria. Veteran movie director Stanley Kwan has started shooting a new film, Ba Ge Nu Ren Yi Ti Ishi, in Hong Kong this week. The 60-year-old director opened his film set to the press and introduced his two leading ladies. Sammy Chung and Gigi Leung play two actresses who are arch rivals, forced to unite on stage in a new play. Kwan, who co-wrote the film's screenplay, said the inspiration for the movie came from an iconic Hong Kong building, City Hall. Hong Kong City Hall houses one of the oldest concert halls on the island, and it's also an important hub for the arts and theater community, as many concerts, plays, and exhibitions are held there. But 2 years ago, there was a proposal to demolish the building. Kwan said his personal attachment to City Hall helped him with the story.
City Hall is a big part of my childhood memories. I saw movies here, attended film festivals, watched plays, attended concerts and exhibitions, etc. The news of its possible demolition gave me the idea of writing a screenplay about the City Hall. That's how the story came about.
Kwan, whose movies often feature the struggles of women both in relationships with men and with each other, cast Sammy Chung, with whom he worked on 2005's Everlasting Regret, to bring the character of actress Su Ling to life. Chung, one of Hong Kong's most prolific entertainers, battled depression after Everlasting Regret and later underwent a religious conversion. Kwan said that he hopes that Chung brings all her life experiences to her character.
I feel like, in a way, the reason I cast Sammy in the role of Su Ling has a lot to do with her journey being falling ill, closing herself off, to finding religion, and then recovery. In a way, that's very similar to the character of Su Ling. I welcomed and am very happy to see the change in Sammy. I hope she projects her raw emotions and all her experiences onto the character.
When filming started this week, the 45-year-old Chung said she couldn't wait to delve into her new role.
My character in the movie is more passive, and Gigi's character is more aggressive. She has a lot of issues with the stage actress that I play. There are a lot of things going on between these two women, but in a subtle way.
The movie also reunites Chung with her off-screen pal Gigi Leung. The two had worked together in the 1996 romantic comedy Feel 100%. Ba Ge Nu Ren Yi Ti Ishi will begin filming or continue filming in Hong Kong through the first quarter of this year. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. And let us hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Dan Crafton. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the day.